Hey, everybody. Guess what? It's time for another episode of Comedy Film Nerds.
Episode 259. And you know what? I'm excited because it's another first-time guest.
We've had a lot of first-time guests, you guys, mm-hmm. and it's been good. We've been making an effort for that. So
it's been mostly good.
Mostly. Yeah. Well, was there one you didn't like that I'm just now finding out about?
Yeah.
There was one you didn't like? Oh, man. Don't do that.
No, I'm kidding. Everyone's been golden.
Everyone's been golden. Yeah. Well, that sounds very insincere. That sounds like you're lying. What a weird way to start an episode.
That is a little weird. Yeah. Kind of negative.
Really negative.
Yeah. All right.
So maybe this guest is going to be one Chris doesn't like, like some of the other ones.
We'll see. Yeah, some mystery guest. You have to guess which guest I didn't like out of 259. Which is the one? So, anyway, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got some great movies we're going to go over. Predestination. We're going to talk about Chappie. There's some...
Well, wait a minute. You said we have some great movies.
Yeah, I didn't say which ones. Okay. Again, it's a guessing game. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about Life Itself.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a great DVD pick. And we're also going to be talking about the movies coming out, Cinderella and Run All Night.
Boom.
But we are going to introduce our guest right now. Very, very talented guy. Multitasker, you could say. Mm-hmm. Big guy in the tech world. Also pop culture and a big podcasting maven.
I think that's the first time we've used that word in 259 episodes.
It has not been appropriate until now.
Until now. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Podcast maven.
Tom Merritt.
Hi. I'm going to try not to disappoint you now.
Go, maven, go.
Yeah. So I host a Daily Tech News show, Cord Killers, Sword and Laser, a bunch of other shows, mostly just do podcasting. It's fun.
Now, It's a mixture of tech and pop culture stuff. Like, Sword and Laser is your pop culture one,
That's
right?
Science fiction and fantasy. Cord Killers is about TV and movies, mostly cord cutting and watching TV and movies. And Daily Tech News show is about tech news, and it's daily.
So you do six podcasts a day, is what you're saying.
Close. Yeah, it feels like it sometimes. Yeah.
These are all daily podcasts.
No, just one of them. Just the daily one. Yeah.
Okay. And then the other ones are the other two are weekly?
Yep.
Okay, cool. And how long have you been podcasting?
Since March 30th, 2005.
Nice. Wow.
In fact, Buzz Out Loud was my first podcast at CNET.com. We're doing our 10-year anniversary March 29th.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
So you're still involved with CNET then?
No. The show was canceled years ago, but we're just doing a 10-year anniversary show.
It's like a Gilligan's Island reunion.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly.
Bringing everybody together.
I got to put on some weight, you know, go bald.
Yeah, good. Okay. That makes great sense. All right. Well, let's
get into it. And then we want to get into a little bit more about what Tom's doing with podcasting and what he did with Patreon a little later. But first, we got to talk about Chappie. We have to talk about Chappie.
I can't.
Are you a happy Chappie?
Oh, shut up. Like, that movie was so...
The screenwriter of Short Circuit's going, that was a stupid movie.
Well, no, I mean, honestly, like, the dumbest parts of RoboCop, Short Circuit 2, and maybe some of the Thunderdome kids all got put into this.
This blender that didn't have any settings.
Oh, God damn it.
It's funny when you see a mashup, but it's like you're supposed to take the best parts when you're... cutting pieces together of a science fiction film. They actually took the worst parts.
Okay.
Even like the giant robot, it had the same design as the one in RoboCop.
They took the same. Yeah, they just basically took that. They dusted off that robot and
said, gave it to Hugh Jackman.
And it's the same storyline.
Exactly.
It's the same fucking story.
So let's start a little more broadly. You and I both. Fans of Neil Blomkamp, loved District 9.
Yes.
I thought Elysium was not so good, not as good.
I gave him a pass. You know, I gave Elysium a pass because I was like, this just, Elysium reeked of like big studios.
Grabbing a talented filmmaker.
Telling him,
oh,
you got to put this and this in there.
Right. But as it turns out from movie 3, that may not have been the case. First, I'm going to talk about actually what I was impressed with this film. Now, Neil Blomkamp has a visual arts background, and the movie's visual effects are absolutely fantastic. I think the visual effects were amazing, and I think the visual effects in all his films were amazing because of the vision he has with them. You really feel like it's like a hard science fiction, like just barely into the future. Everything is almost like hardware junk based. Like it's some of it's kind of thrown together. It looks like new technology, but it's also the way with his visual effects, he layers everything. You believe that these things are in the scenes with the actors, yes. Like in a way that some sloppy visual effects are, oh, well, that's clearly green screen. That's clearly, you know, a robot that's not there. But with his visual effects, it's seamless. It's absolutely fantastic visually. Where I think his last two movies have fallen apart has been on the page. I mean, clearly this was a horrible script and a horrible script problem. And you look at too, is it was it ego? Was it not any control? Like what happened to make this script go so far off the rails? Especially when you have like scenes that make absolutely no sense. Like I'm going to give you an example of when Chappie is first, quote, comes alive, he is a, this is not a spoiler, he is basically a child. So, okay, so he has to learn everything. He doesn't even know language. Now, technically, as a robot, he's supposed to learn very quickly. In the next scene, after he's being a child and doesn't understand anything, maybe a couple scenes later, maybe not the next scene, he's networking PlayStation 4s together to be able to transfer consciousness from people and robots. That's kind of a leap.
He's a quick learner.
That's quick learner. And also, he's using PS4s, so that's even better. There's so many things wrong with this film, but I will say the visual effects are not one of them. And when the movie starts, this is another movie that was great out of the gate. It starts, you see the effects, you see this world that's created, you see this crime-ridden city of Johannesburg that, you know, you don't have to put every movie in Johannesburg. You could, there's the world you could actually use. And the way that the robots first are deployed, like the robot policemen officers, and the way that the human police officers actually walk behind them because they're basically walking shields, it all makes perfect sense. Like, this makes perfect sense to me, how this would be in the near future and what we would do.
And in a city – Johannesburg actually initially made sense to me because I was like, oh, this is a city with a heavy crime problem.
Right.
And, you know, let's deploy them
right there.
And
then this movie goes so far off the rails that it's like you're watching these scenes and you're like, well, there's no way that anyone is enjoying some of this movie.
Before we continue, Tom, have you seen District 9? Have you seen?
I've seen District 9 and I've seen the trailer for Chappie, but I think you're saving me right now.
Yes.
Seeing.
There's
Did
no
you
question.
Like District 9?
I love District 9.
Yes.
Yeah, it was great.
Because it was social commentary, it had a little sense of humor, but was really...
And, you know, the thing about District 9, too, is it was based on a short film. And also, you had Peter Jackson looking over his shoulder, too. Mm. So you've got actually these... you had like basically a big producer, and also I think I'm not sure, the fans will correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Peter Jackson's company actually funded this film. I don't even think it was a studio funded film.
What I remember about District 9 is when you get towards the end and you realize where you are in that film, you turn around and you're like, if you would have told me this before I came in here, I would have told you this was a stupid movie. But he leads you into it. It sounds like that didn't happen.
No, this leads you into a stupid movie. This is what happens here. But you also, like, another thing about District 9 was that it was one of those happy accidents where they were set to make the Halo movie. And when that fell out, Peter Jackson and Neil Blomkamp, they're like, well, why don't we just make, you know, your short film into a feature? And that's how this movie was made. And like I said, I love that
film. Real quick, it was Columbia Pictures. It was Alpha Corps, which was the U.S. company that helped make... Elysium, and then another company, Genre Films, which helped did Elysium, Let's Be Cops, and
so Jeffy it might be Ford. Some kind of fund, but yeah. Maybe not big studio movie. Anyway,
I want to say this though, because what Tom just said about District 9 brings up a great point, because the beginning of Chappie, they start the way they started District 9. Remember District 9, they're interviewed and people go, oh, wow, I can't believe this happened. And you're like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Yeah.
They do the same thing.
And then abandon it.
Yeah, we never come back to that again.
So you also see the sloppy screenwriting. It's like, well, wait, are you going to create this realistic world with interviews and experts and all this stuff like you did in District 9? Only in the first 5 minutes. And then that is abandoned.
Completely. And the what they can't believe is that robots... like security robots have been created, or
no? The way they did it in the beginning of the movie, they were like, wow, you know, when Chappie, what happened with him? Boy, that was crazy.
So it's a flashback thing.
Yeah, it's a flashback, and they speak very vaguely, so it has that same thing. Like, I had the same feeling you did with District 9. So when that happened at the beginning, I'm like, okay,
yeah,
this is going to be cool. Like, what's Chappie going to do? Because the trailer is kind of vague in terms of what... Mm-hmm.
What actually happens in the film.
What actually happens in the film.
You know there's a big robot fight. That's all. You're sure that's going to happen. But again, few and far between.
So they couldn't believe they'd paid for the movie? Is that what they're
saying? Yeah, that's exactly really kind of what it felt like.
How did we get the... $49 million budget.
So I really think that, you know, Neil Blomkamp, like we're talking about, this is... he's a decent director. He is. He's an amazing visual effects artist, but he's got to stay away from script writing. You just have to. I mean, it's not... He hasn't put in 20 years of writing. He's put in 20 years of visual effects. That doesn't automatically translate into being an amazing screenwriter. You just get some help.
I don't understand what happened, because the guy who wrote it with Terry Tatchell also wrote District 9 with him. So I don't know... Because here's what happens in this movie. Like you said, it starts out, there's that flashback thing. It's like, wow, this could be interesting. And then there's just like Hugh Jackman's character is the most predictable dude. And then, so the movie is trying...
It's all stock characters. There's no interesting characters in this.
Well, nothing new happens.
And there's nothing new. There's no character motivation that makes any sense or is at all compelling.
And they're trying to do this like, you know, like, what happens when the robots do start to think for themselves? Like, that's the question they're trying to ask. These questions were asked in fucking Blade Runner 30 some years ago.
Yeah.
Like, and RoboCop. And I mean,
there's nothing new in this film.
And her. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And her, and poorly asked in iRobot and AI. I mean, like, it's
go back to 2001.
Yes.
You know, look at how
50 years ago these questions were all asked in a better way and more compelling and more interesting. So if you're going to ask, like,
it has to be an interesting and a unique way, and that didn't happen at all.
Has he not seen these movies?
Well, that makes you wonder, like, well, Evan, you need to know what kind of came before you and also take the better parts of them. So the other thing that was so fascinating is that how poorly developed the characters were. Like, you have Hugh Jackman, he's like, oh, he's the ex-soldier who wants to put his giant robot on the market. And you have basically a company that's an arms company. That, you know, they're making their police robots, but also... He's presenting this giant robot, and he's saying, yeah, it's good for, you know, getting rid of aircraft and all this stuff. And these are like police chiefs that are like, well, we don't have any need for that. Don't you think that if you're an arms company, your boss would go, you know, why don't you try selling it to the military instead? They might want to buy a mech, maybe, if they're for their wars. And then this is the thing that I have to ask, because we have fans in South Africa. I have to ask you guys this, because this – scene made absolutely no sense to me. And I know there's some cultural differences. Hugh Jackman works in an office along with all his other colleagues. He's in a cubicle. He's armed. He is wearing a shoulder holster and he has a gun.
Right.
And he pulls a gun on a colleague and points it at his head. Now, and then he comes, oh, no, I was joking. I wouldn't bring a loaded gun into an office. It's just a big joke.
And just to be clear, he's not a cop.
Yeah, he's not a cop. Okay. No, he's not a cop.
Just asking.
He's got a guy that works actually in the office. Now, we're gun crazy in the United States, but that would never happen in any office here. People don't come armed and point their guns at each other in the office. So I don't know if that was a weird kind of like South African satire or like what's going on with that scene. So if you live in South Africa, explain that specific scene to me, why he would not get arrested for pulling a gun and pointing it at someone else's head in an office.
And I also think, and then here's something that happened is the two main bad guys, this man and this woman, Ninja and Yolandi, I guess are some sort of comics or something like that from South Africa, because I felt like there was all these inside jokes happening that I didn't...
Right, definitely some cultural stuff.
Right, and so they did a short, I'm just looking this up on IMDb, called Shini Wam, and it's named after the Zulu language struggle song, the compiled shenanigans of eccentric South African couple with wheelchairs and guns as they attempt to prove they are not to be trifled with. So they're like, I guess they're known as like online or short film fake gangsters or something like that. So
There was some stunt casting.
There was some stunt casting. They were named Ninja and Yolandi. Like
those were their characters.
Those are their characters. So I think they play these sort of like wannabe street thugs as sort of their...
That's their thing.
That's their thing. Mm. But again, that was like... So maybe people in South Africa were like, I loved it. They were hilarious.
That was fantastic. Yeah.
But I didn't get any of that. And I was just like, these characters are getting annoying. And why the fuck is Dev Patel keep coming back to them? And then she falls in love with the robot. Yo, Cheppy, he's my baby or whatever. It was just, oh.
Yeah. There was a lot wrong with this movie. And... one of the things, too, is the tone was completely off. Like, when you watch District 9, even Elysium had a very even tone.
Sure.
This one was like, well, is it trying to be a comedy now? Or is that now we're watching, like, you know, all this, like, commentary and segregation and these heavy sci-fi themes? Oh, no, now we're just making jokes about being gangsters and holding guns. So I wasn't sure what to make of this film. And also, as I watched it, I just got... more and more disappointed, and I don't know if I'm gonna go rush out and go see his next film.
I'm not.
Now, the only I know he's I'm sure he's working on something. I believe he got the Alien franchise. He's gonna do an Alien movie.
Is it gonna take place in Johannesburg?
It might take place in Johannesburg. Yeah, it might be an Alien invasion of Johannesburg.
It's space Johannesburg.
Yeah, yeah.
Space Jobo.
So if you know some good screenwriters come on board, I'd like to see what he could do. Honestly, it's a little similar to M. Night. When you look at it, like, we'll see how many more come. You've got a great first film, and you also have a fairly decent director. Like, M. Night is not a bad director. He's a serviceable director. It's the writing. It's all in the writing. And I really think that, you know, he's got a good movie in him, but he's got to release some of the control and let some screenwriters take over.
Because he's written all three of his movies, and either written or co-wrote written his three films.
Bring somebody else on board, take care of the directing and the visual effects.
And the Alien, untitled Neil Blomkamp Alien project.
Yeah, so who knows what's going on in there.
And the writers are Neil Blomkamp, Dan O'Bannon, and one other person.
That will change. You know, as it goes into
Chappie just ate it in the box office.
Yeah, but that was not unexpected. I really didn't expect people to go to see this film.
I was one of the few people who saw the trailer and went, "This could be good." You were like,
"I don't think so." I was hoping
I was
it would
put
because
off
I'm a fan.
In the trailer by Chappie himself, right?
Yeah,
the lead.
Yeah.
But I thought, oh well, there'll be more to that. It'll evolve like it did in District 9, and it won't be little young baby annoying Chappie anymore. But apparently that.
No,
that didn't matter.
That's it. That's all you get.
Yeah. You pretty much did. And to the point where it was like, he became like bratty. Like, he's ignoring it. Like,
find one character in that movie you gave a shit about.
Yeah, there was not one.
No one.
There was not one.
Didn't care about anybody.
Yeah. You know, Sigourney Weaver was pretty much walking through. You know, I think she had no good lines. And my favorite part it's like it's so sloppy. Like Hugh Jackman, he's like, all right, this is my chance. Now I'm going to get my robot onto the streets. All I have to do is convince the boss to let me do it. After all this time, she's like, no, no, no. And then he's like, you got to let me do it now. We don't know what's going on with another robot. Okay, go ahead. So he gets to use this giant robot to start shooting everything up. And then, this is a bit of a spoiler because honestly, I got to tell you guys, this is the goal.
Here's some spoilers.
Are some spoilers. You can skip this, but we have to talk about this because it's part of the film and the problems with it. The goal of letting Hugh Jackman unleash this giant mech that he controls was to go after and destroy Chappie because that was the threat. Instead, he takes a few detours and shoots a bunch of people instead that he doesn't have to.
In the dumbest way.
Yeah, you're controlling a mech. You can ignore the people. You can just go and actually get to the robot that you want to destroy.
The mech is not under its own control?
No, the mech is actually remote controlled. That's one of the
Yes, Tom, you're right.
Yeah.
I see why you needed to bring that up.
Yes. So basically, Hugh Jackman is working a joystick and sending his mech, you know, and off to killing people.
There's all these things like they do those things. They establish some sci-fi rules and just bail on.
Yeah, they bail on them pretty quickly.
They do that fun thing. Yeah. They do stuff where you go, there's no way. There's no way they would just.
Cult hit ever? Campy? No? Nothing?
Well, that's the thing. It wasn't so. Like RoboCop, is a cult hit because it has the crazy king. I'll buy that for a dollar.
And right. It also has very biting satire, especially for the time. It was ultra violent, but right. Everything had like a purpose, and it was commentary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same thing with Starship Troopers. I mean, Verhoeven's movies were very specific in what they were trying to say.
Yeah.
And RoboCop was also one of those movies that when you saw it, like, this looks absolutely ridiculous and stupid. Like even the tagline was like, what was it? Half human, half robot, all cop.
Right.
You know? And when you actually watch the film, you're like, oh, well, no, this is satire. This is, everything is very mm-hmm. Deliberate on what you're being shown. This went in the opposite direction. This was like
slapped together, man.
It slapped together and like wanted to take itself seriously, but also wanted it to be like also have like really funny comedy parts, well, and they fell flat.
Well, that's the thing. It now that we know kind of that there was this comedy team in it, it feels to me like, oh, we'll just let them do their thing. Yeah. Let them just go.
It sounds like Key and Peele showing up in Fargo, except that worked.
Right.
Even if you didn't know Key and Peele, yeah. They still made sense as characters on their own.
Right. They didn't go crazy on that in the show. They were actually subdued and in that world properly.
Because that show is written well, and they said, we're going to plug these two. Those two guys are very funny, but if you just threw them in a movie and just said, hey, guys, just win it.
Do whatever
it,
you want.
It would be...
A mess.
It would be a mess. All right.
So now let's get to a movie that actually I'm hearing great things about. In fact, Neil really liked it. Predestination, and we actually our fans have been
this now this was specifically this. We've heard from several fans, but our 17-year-old Aussie fan down under, Sean Coates, recommended us to watch this. I was looking for it. It's not on Netflix, but
it's on demand right now. I think you can get it on iTunes too.
But now, Tom, you saw it. What did you think of this?
I rented it. Really intriguing. It's based on the Robert Heinlein novel All You Zombies, which I get why they didn't call it that.
Yes.
For a while, I was like, why'd they change the name? And then it kind of struck like, oh, everyone would expect zombies.
Zombies in the film.
There are no, spoiler, no zombies in the film. But it's
and no one goes anywhere.
It's my favorite time travel type of story because it's internally consistent, which is much harder to do.
Of course
it is. Usually you just cheat and, you know, Voyager can change its past or whatever, right? but they did a great job of staying fairly true to Heinlein's book and having it all fit together. And Sarah Snook is amazing because she plays several, well, it's spoilery to even tell you who she plays, but she has several different costume changes, several different people at several different points in their life, and she's amazing at it.
And Ethan Hawke is in it. How does he do?
Ethan Hawke, you know, it's funny, just saw Boyhood right before I saw Predestination, and it was kind of hard not to see him being Ethan Hawke in it sometimes, but he's serviceable. Like, he doesn't distract from it for me.
Now, what's the basic premise of the film?
Basic premise of the film is that at the beginning, a sort of a time cop, I can't remember what they call it, is going back.
Temporal agent?
Temporal agent, is that it? Thank you. Is going back to investigate something because it's their job to preserve the timeline. And he starts looking into this woman's past particularly, and you don't know exactly why. And then events, you start to come out of sequence and you start to see these different stories and three different timelines start to intertwine. And I'm trying not to... I'm trying not to say too much because...
Good, because you know what? This is one we actually want to see, too.
Yeah. I really want to see this. And I know I see that Noah Taylor's in it, who I just love as a character actor. How is he... Does he play multiple people, too? Like,
it's mostly Ethan Hawke and Sarah.
Ah.
The others are very ancillary characters. It's mostly their connections throughout the time. And that's a really interesting part of it, too, because you get a futuristic set... You also get a 40s and a 60s. So you get a little of that Mad Men feel, a little bit of that, you know, recreating a place in time and seeing both Sarah Snook's character as she grows up in those different eras and what she's doing and how she's behaving. And also Ethan Hawke trying to pretend like he belongs as he goes back into these different eras.
Wow.
And it's that, you know, oh, I just saw you yesterday, but it's been years for you.
Is it that thing now, again, without getting into any spoilers, is it that thing, because I love time travel movies, but where is it more about the, you know, the time travel theories and what is it, like the big what if questions, or is it really just about their relationship, or?
Well, both. Oh, okay. And those two questions are tied directly to each other, which is, how can I affect the past? Can I change the past? Because now I'm getting to know you and understanding your backstory. I don't want certain things that I know are going to happen, but I don't think I can avoid it, or can I?
Ah, well, that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's also the directors, the Spierig brothers, who did Daywalkers.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize. I didn't put that together. That's
Yeah.
It's the style of...
Daybreakers.
The style of...
They weren't walking. They were breaking.
They were, well...
they were breakdancing.
Yeah.
You were trying to make it less violent. They're just walking. It's okay, Mom. But the style of the shooting of the film is really noirish and appropriate to those time periods that they're visiting. And it's very much got a detective novel, a lot of guys in fedoras and stuff like that.
So cool. That sounds good. I'm gonna look for it.
So check that out, guys. That sounds really good.
And it was one of those things where they released it in theaters and on demand at the same time. It's on iTunes, like you said, and that's where I rented it. But I think you can get it Amazon, Vudu. They just want people to see it.
Oh, that's great. Which it's interesting to talk about that model, which will kind of segue into what Tom has been doing with his show. I'd love to see some hard numbers to know, because before there was this clear like theatrical, then DVD, then you know what I mean? And a lot of small, I mean, obviously the Avengers or whatever, like
you're not going to get Avengers on demand.
You're not going to get Avengers on demand because it's smart, but it's, I wonder, and it seems like the evidence must just be that a lot of films are doing this. So it must be making sense for them. A smaller film like this that isn't going to get in 5,000 screens in the States or whatever, that this model of, hey, just see it. It seems to be working because I guess, just thinking myself and just fans and Tom, maybe you can answer to this in terms of your own thinking specifically with this film. Was it like if this was in a theater near you or you could watch it at home, would you have just gone, I'd rather watch it at home?
Well, it wasn't a theater. It was a theater, maybe 5 miles from me, not that far. Mm-hmm. But I watched it at home because I knew that if I waited to go see it in the theater, it really wouldn't change the experience in this particular movie, and I probably wouldn't see it, and I wanted to see it. So it gave me that extra push to be like, you know what? There's no excuse for me not to see it. Whereas Avengers, I don't want to watch that at home on day one.
No.
I want to watch that in a big theater, right? So small films like this are taking a cue from what independent musicians, I think, have learned, which is if you don't have the name recognition, it's better to just make it available as many places as possible.
And that's a great point, too. A movie like this is... a movie like, you know what, I can get a good experience with this film at home. I don't have to seek out an art house theater that's difficult to find. I may not have the time I want. Like some of our art house theaters, you'll find a movie you want, there'll be one showing. And if you miss it, I'm like, oh, great, now I have to wait till tomorrow, whatever. But if I can just pull it up and watch it anytime I want, I'll pay the $6.99 or whatever, or even the $9.99.
It's funny because I've been in this situation myself. Every week I gotta see something, and sometimes it's like Monday night. I'm like, shit, I haven't seen anything yet.
Right.
And
on demand is a great way to.
On demand is like, you know what? I don't have time because it's 8:30 or there's a 9 o'clock show. It's like, man,
or it's an 8:45 show.
Yeah,
you can't make it.
Or it's just like
now I gotta wait till 11.
I'm not going to an 11 o'clock show. You know what I mean? So, but I can on demand this. I like this, and it's got to be helping these mid-level and smaller.
Especially
films.
Apparently the Australian movies. Like our fan from Australia was saying, these critically acclaimed, well-received films are not doing well in Australia. They find their audience outside of the country. They said this movie, The Babadook, The Rover, they said they all have done better outside of Australia, which is really interesting. Now, Babadook is another one that people are saying is really good, but it looks a little frightening. So I don't know if I'll actually see it.
Let's get into now. Speaking of unique and new business models.
Yeah,
Tom, let's get into...
Yeah, let's bore everyone with business models. Sorry, just kidding.
Let's crunch the numbers. But look, go in a little more detail specifically... what you've been doing with your podcast, how basically you're making your living as a podcaster.
Yeah. So I, like I said, I,
until
I started,
today,
I started podcasting in 2005 and I finished today.
Yeah.
I started at CNET when I was working there and I got the bug.
What
I really,
CNET?
CNET is this website. They used to have websites. You could see them on your phone still. And CNET is a product review website. It does all kinds of tech news and product reviews. And so we started doing podcasting when
too,
the
right?
rage started. Yeah, mm-hmm. GameSpot is mm-hmm. part of CNET, they do mm-hmm. video game reviews. In fact, TV.com is part of that. Okay. They have some film reviews on TV.com, oddly, but they do. Anyway, so I started doing podcasting there. And after a few years of doing that, I just wanted to do podcasts. And so I left and joined Leo Laporte's Twit outfit, which is all podcasts. That's mm-hmm. all he does. I worked there for a few years and then left there at the end of 2013 and went entirely independent. So now I'm just doing my own podcast. And when I left, I was looking at lots of different business models. I was talking to advertising networks. I was talking about paid promotion and all of this sort of thing. And Patreon had just launched the summer before. My friend Brian Brushwood for our show Cord Killers said, well, let's try just fan funding it and see what happens.
Right.
Go specifically to anyone out there listening who doesn't know what Patreon is. Tell exactly what it is.
Patreon.com is sort of like Kickstarter, but instead of having an end date, you subscribe to
model.
Per month or per unit. So it was started by musicians with the idea of like, oh, I'll make a song, you pay me. And so it's a patronage model.
Oh, I see. So they're just all just a subscription for content.
Yeah. And so what we did with Cord Killers was every episode we put out, you give us a dollar. That's what we asked for. If you like it. If you don't like it, you don't have to give us anything. And we raised plenty of money to continue to do that show. So about a month into doing Daily Tech News Show, I decided to try that for Daily Tech News Show as well. But because it was daily, I felt like it was too much to ask. Even if you say, like, just give me 5 cents a show, like trying to process in that and having people wrap their heads around daily. So I changed it to a monthly thing. And I said, give me a dollar a month, which is 5 cents a show. And that took off too. And it's been growing ever since.
And people can give more if they want, obviously.
They can, yeah. And I do a few perks for people, just like Kickstarter, you know, giving you inside information or tips on things and hangouts and stuff like that.
Oh, cool. And then
do you help fix their laptop? Is that
no,
one of the tiers?
No, that's going to need a much higher tier. That's a Patreon all its own.
So then are you basically then are just in office, like you have an office space and you're doing this every day, pretty much doing the daily?
Yeah. I have a studio downstairs in my house and mm-hmm. Go down there and do usually like two shows a day, the Daily Tech News Show and then one of the others.
Ah, cool.
And we're going to be on one of them next week.
We are?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do a show called Current Geek with Scott Johnson where we just talk about pop culture and geeky stuff. Usually it has a little bit of film, a little bit of comics, a little bit of
great.
Tech.
No, I saw the email. You saw it, sent me emails, right? Mm-hmm. I'm an idiot. I forget everything.
Well, Chris is going to be on.
Chris,
you should join us.
You should join us.
You're more than welcome.
What is a podcast? Tell me what that is. Mm-hmm.
So now this Patreon model, too, we've been they're a supporter of the podcast festival this year too, and we're happy to have them on board. What the way it works too, like let's say you take a break from content for like, you're like, you know what, I'm gonna take a month off. How does Patreon work? Do they like get the month off from paying, or like does it like when you drop content they get charged, or is it monthly regardless?
Yeah, when you do it by time it's a little trickier because you as the content owner have to say, okay, I'm not going to charge you because I took the month off. I haven't done that. I don't uh-huh. plan to do that, but you'd have to. When you do the pay per item model, mm-hmm. you only get charged if an item comes out.
I see.
And the other side of it that's cool, if you're like, well, wait a minute, I'll pay for 3 or 4 a month, but if you just go crazy and do 10 episodes in a month, I don't want to pay for that. Patreon provides a way for you to put a max say, okay, I'll back your show every week, but only 4 a month.
Ah, okay.
So
and then, so then when you like go on vacation, do you just bank episodes so you're always dropping content, or do you just take an actual break?
I've only taken one vacation since I started doing this, and I just got other people to come in and do the show.
Oh, great.
Do you have guest hosts?
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. do you live stream it as well?
Yeah, I live stream it on Google Hangouts. More just for people's fun to watch us record. It gives you a YouTube video afterwards.
Oh, neat.
There is a level, if we get to it on Patreon, where we'll actually create a real video podcast.
Ah, okay, cool. Have you gone out and done any of these shows live, like a live ticketed event or anything like that?
Yeah, I've done them at conferences. So at Dragon Con in Atlanta last year, at Nerdtacular in Salt Lake City. And in other shows, I've done things at Comic-Con or places like that. Usually better to do them around conferences because more people are coming into town. And so you can get more people who want to see your show at the same time.
And pretty good turnouts for these?
Yeah, yeah, pretty good. The one in Dragon Con, we packed a big room with a couple hundred people.
Nice.
Oh, very cool.
That's awesome.
So what's next for you? Like, I know you love doing podcasts. You have any in development where you're like, oh, if I had more time, I would be doing these?
Always. I'm always trying to stop myself. In fact, I forbid myself from launching anything new for a while. So, yeah, right now I'm just trying to keep all of the things I've got going and improving on them, focusing my energy into that. I also write just for fun, novels and stuff, and I self-publish those. Maybe someday I'll get really good at it. But you know,
name one of your novels.
I just put out one called Citadel 32. Mm-hmm. It's about a moon base that got cut off from the Earth after the Earth had a apocalyptic scenario, and there is a second perspective on Earth that's the post-apocalyptic Earth recovering and investigating these legends of people being on the moon.
And how does Patreon fit into the story?
That one doesn't. Yeah, it's not yet. That'll be next. Basically, what I do is I write a novel during National Novel Writing Month every year, and then I polish it up over the course of the next year or two, and I have a friend who's an editor who helps me out.
When is National
Novel? It's in November.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. People literally, they try to write a novel in 1 month.
Wow.
Yeah, you write like, I can't remember exactly, it's 1,600 words a day or something like that for a month.
It's crazy.
Yeah,
it's insane.
The idea is to try to get 50,000 words down in a month.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
That's yeah. It sounds worse than it is.
But I bet you if you
get in the rhythm, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a curve to it, and the guys who run that National Novel Writing Month know, like, okay, we know you're going through the I need to quit phase right now, and we know you're on the high phase right now. Like, they've been doing it so long.
Right, you'll get in a groove, and then you'll just start banging out, and you'll hit 2,000-3,000 words in one day.
Yeah, so, yeah. The key is not to quit when you hit the down phase.
Right, right. Well, that's cool.
All right, well, let's move forward to some DVDs coming out.
Let's go DVDs. Night at the Museum 3 answers all the unanswered questions from Night at the Museum 1 and 2.
Finally. You know what would make this movie great, would make it better, is if Chappie was in it.
Are you a happy Chappie?
Oh, God. Chappie, he's my son.
Yeah, mommy.
Jesus. Imagine Chappie running around that dumb museum with all those other idiots.
That'd be great. Getting eaten by the Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Oh, but he couldn't because he can fight him and he's titanium. Yeah. And then when Chappie starts talking street rap.
Yeah, and then he would put together a bunch of Game Boys and make a nuclear bomb.
Oh, great. Good stuff.
Really gets in your head, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does because it was, I think the reason is because we really wanted to like it.
The level of disappointment comes at you so hard.
Right.
Because you're like, you know, okay, all right. What the fuck is going on? Like, it just, oh, yeah.
So next movie is Listen Up, Philip. This is one of those movies that was an indie movie that was out a long time ago, and I'm surprised it's taken this long to get to DVD. It is not a good film. If you bring it up, it's you know, I love the lead actor in this movie. It's Jason Schwartzman. And
Moss,
now Jason Schwartzman, imagine Jason Schwartzman. I've said this before when I did this review, when I watched it. He is a lovable asshole in a lot of movies. Now imagine if you took the lovable part out and he was just an asshole and watched that for 2 hours. Not nearly as interesting.
Raw Schwartzman.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not a great film. Next one is the DVD pick. Graham, actually, you saw this, Life Itself. This is the documentary about Roger Ebert.
This is a really good documentary on a lot of levels. Obviously, if you listen to this show, you're a fan of movies, so it's almost like recommend. Like, I would really require this as part of the curriculum.
Yeah,
it is, because for several levels, in the sense that you learn about how he came up. He was like old school journalist in terms of, you know, he ran his college newspaper, and he was in college in the early 60s at University of Illinois in Champaign-Urbana. I think he was like accepted into Harvard, and his parents were like, nope, can't afford it. You're going to U of I, baby. So
it was risky business before risky business.
It was totally risky business. And so it resonated a lot with me personally, just because I grew up in Chicago. Many friends went to University of Illinois. And, you know, they were talking about his early days of, you know, writing story, like when JFK was assassinated. And this is back in the days of printing presses on the college thing. And it's like, you know, the whole building shook. And there was an ad right next to it that had like someone with a musket or something like that. And it was pointing right at the photo of JFK. And he said, we got to stop this. And they're like, no, son, it's too late. He goes, believe me, get this stopped right now. And they did it. And there's interviews with, you know, his friends who were like, you know, we're 20 years old and we're watching one of our contemporaries tell these adults, shut it the fuck down, you know? And so he became this sort of legend in college. And then going in the whole history again, it's great history in terms of the city of Chicago and Chicago newspaper politics. You know, he came up, at the Chicago Sun-Times and they made him, okay, you're writing the movie reviews. And back then movie reviews, it was like Matt and A was the byline because it was made spelled matinee and just whatever writer was like, whatever that's called, a pseudonym or
they're just nom de plume.
Yeah, exactly. So they're just like, all right, Chris, you write the movie reviews this week. You're matinee. And then
it's like writing obituaries.
Exactly. So he was the first one to become like
an actual
film critic with the Chicago Sun-Times. And it was funny. He's talking about in the early days, they'd all go out drinking and, you know, the Old Town Ale House is one of the bars he drank at, which I have been to. I was there when I was headlining Zanies. Several fans of this show, Ashley Raper, the Hanson brothers, came to one of my shows, and we went to that bar afterwards. And there's pictures of him up there.
Oh, very cool.
Some of the interviews about those drinking days were filmed in that bar. It talks about all the stuff that I didn't really know because I just remember watching him as a kid.
And at the movies.
At the movies, which was originally on PBS in Chicago, and then it became on WGN. And I loved that show because the way they talked about movies. Like, I could never really get on board with Leonard Maltin so much.
And it was always fun when they argued, too. Like, because it was a sincere argument where they, like, it wasn't like they hated each other. It was like, we have a disagreement, and,
it's funny. They did not get along on a lot of levels.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
Okay.
It was so fascinating because there's so much cool stuff in there. The Chicago Sun-Times was sort of the South Side blue-collar paper. Mayor Washington, which was the first ever black mayor of Chicago, read it. And the Tribune was viewed as the sort of snobby North Shore. So
it's for Cubs fans.
For Cubs fans. It's for Cubs fans, exactly. I'm a Cubs fan. I read the Trib, and I grew up on the North Shore. But like there is that line in the city, and it's like the South Side reads the Sun-Times, and they go White Sox fans, and everybody comes together for the Bears, and you know what I mean?
And everyone enjoys the parks.
And everybody enjoys the parks. So there was that whole thing. And so, like, literally, Gene Siskel came from the Tribune. So there was already this, like...
The rivalry.
Okay,
man. I didn't know that. That's great.
It was so fascinating.
I want to see this movie even more now.
There's so much interesting stuff to it. The only thing that's a little difficult to watch, just because they're showing footage of when he was still alive, when he had to have his jaw removed, and that's, like, a little...
jarring.
Yeah. Johnny Joke Machine. Yeah, it is. It is a little hard to watch, but it's compelling in the sense that he lost his voice and he's just like, I'm going to keep typing. And you see how strong his wife is. You know, they met in AA and all this stuff about him I never knew.
Does it go into his activism too? Like his political activism?
It goes into all that, how when he lost his voice and couldn't review movies anymore, he was like, I'm going to be on the laptop all day, every day. And he embraced Twitter and was like, was nearing the end of his life. I was like, I don't give a shit. I'm going to say what I want to say. And so it really got into a lot of that. It got into, it's a really compelling documentary. And it also was kind of cool about Chicago because it talks about when he won the Pulitzer Prize. I didn't know. He won the fucking Pulitzer Prize for writing movie reviews.
Yeah.
And you know, they're like,
is he the only one?
I don't know. There's not many.
All right, fans.
I think he was
Twitter. Tweet us. Was Roger Ebert the only one to win a Pulitzer Prize for a movie review?
I definitely think he was the first.
First, okay.
But if there's more fans, let us know. But there's stuff, you know, like the New York Times, like came to him, like Ben Bradley, all these people, and he's like, here's what he said. He goes, I don't want to learn new streets. It's so Chicago. Really just like, is. Come on, I want, you know. So it's a really compelling movie, and his love of film and all that stuff. I cannot recommend this film enough.
Oh, great!
Like, if you're a film fan, you're going to absolutely love.
So if you're
movie.
Yeah, so if you're listening to this show, you have to see this.
You have
film.
To see.
I'm going to watch it now.
And if you grew up watching him, then it's going to make your opinion of him. And that show and what that show was and what him and Gene Siskel were doing and trying to do was so cool because they loved movies. Mm-hmm. And they talk about him doing Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. It's fucking awesome, man. It's worth seeing. So check it out. Life Itself.
And premiering this week, Cinderella. Now, obviously, Disney has kind of ridden this cash machine now. As far as like reviving mm-hmm. live action versions of mm-hmm. their animated classics, Cinderella, you've got Maleficent, like little different takes. You even have Johnny Depp's Alice in, you know, Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland with mm-hmm. the Sad Hatter, Johnny Depp.
The Sad Hatter.
So I think what they are doing is they're looking at ways to repackage these films. And I'm sure after this. What was it? After this, there will be more because they're making money. They're doing well, and they hit that family friendly sweet spot. But they realize, well, we can actually make live action versions of all of these animated movies we made. You know, you have a live action Jungle Book movie coming soon, and you have a lot of these actually.
What?
Yeah, they're on the way. They're being made now. I don't know if they're going to redo some of the live action ones. Like you remember the Disney like Treasure Island, Swiss Family Robinson,
Herbie,
those. Uh huh. I will say there is one Herbie movie that's really hard to find. You have to see. It's one that they did a couple years ago, and it has a bunch of comedians in it. It has Bruce Campbell, Dana Gould, and like Jeff Garlin is in it at the end. There's a Herbie movie.
It's a reboot.
It was one of
fully
those
fully loaded. The one with Michael Keaton.
No, it was a TV movie, and it was really. I don't even know if it's on IMDb, but. What it did, it was kind of like a cap to the franchise, because even like Dean Jones, a very old Dean Jones, was in it, like,
oh, wow.
As a cameo. And, you had these weird, but the comedians were really funny in it. So I don't even know if it's there. You can't,
an IMDb,
if you can find it, good luck, but it's really good. It's Dana Gould is in it. Like I said, Jeff Garland and Bruce Campbell in a Herbie movie. Now there's a couple fans right now going, you just made that up. There's no way that exists. And I'm telling you, it existed. So, and we have a great movie to counter program Cinderella, Run All Night. And you know what's funny? It's like you could criticize Liam Neeson for making the same movie over and over again, but here's the thing.
So what?
You want him to make the same movie over and over again. You kind of like, I want to see this movie now.
Run, Liam, run.
Yes.
Now Ed Harris, who I think is a great bad guy.
Yeah.
And these two are going to lock horns.
Mm-hmm.
I say bring it. Like, bring it hard. These two, one of them killed some of them son or something.
Yeah, and then he's going after his other son, and you got to run, and it's going to be
guns and running and blood feud.
I'm going to assume compressed time movie. Everything happens over the span of one evening.
God, that'd be great.
Yeah. Now, we want to talk about our site spotlight and fan feedback. There was some great responses on the Facebook page about the most overhyped film of all time.
Well, first, let's ask... So we asked, what are your favorite overhyped films? And we said, we put Gone with the Wind. But let me ask you this. So Tom, we there's got some amazing ones here. A lot of people put Forrest Gump. Frozen is on here, Avatar, but then some people with Lost in Translation, which that bums me out a little bit. But what's yours?
So favorite overhyped film?
Well, not your favorite. The most overrated movie in Europe.
That would add another dimension to
it. The most overrated movie. I was going to say Sound of Music if you want to talk overhyped, but still, you know, quality ratio or something.
Yeah, what's a movie that you thought got so much hype and then you saw it and went,
You know what I always use as that differential, right? And I should preface this by saying I don't think it's a bad movie, but the original Jurassic Park was so hyped that by the time I saw it, for some reason I didn't get to see it until like it'd been out for a month, I was like, yeah, the dinosaurs are pretty good, but you know, it's not that scary. Like it just it just really disappointed me because people kept saying over and over, you're gonna be frightened, you're gonna be jumping out of your seat. It's, you know, it's ridiculous. And I'm like,
I wasn't jumping out of my seat.
Don't you think that's what contributes to the overhypeness is when you see it? If you see it opening weekend without much knowledge going in.
Yeah.
If you see it 3 weeks later.
It's not. This is, to me, is worse than spoilers. I actually don't mind, unless it's like a Crying Game type spoiler. Right. But like little things that people tell me don't ruin a movie. What ruins a movie is having them say, you're going to react like this. Because I immediately go, yeah, well, we'll see.
Yeah, maybe I won't.
Yeah, that's actually a good point. When you see a film, especially an overhyped film, can really color your reaction to it. Like I remember when I saw Slumdog Millionaire, everyone was saying it was one of the greatest movies of all time, is one of the best movies of the year, and I watched it and I'm like, it's okay. You know, I don't think it was that amazing. And I would say the most overhyped movie for me would be like Shakespeare in Love that won the Academy Award. I'm like, what? No.
Yeah, I could do that pretty easily with Shakespeare in Love. And that's just one of those gowns and accent movies that the Academy loves.
And Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Ben Affleck 1.0.
It's funny. Somebody here, Negative Steve Mandel, wrote, Napoleon Dynamite, a bunch of annoying characters being not funny, hashtag tell us Thursdays.
there are some good ones on there.
There are some good ones. I would hear Napoleon Dynamite, I went into it and was laughing initially. But then I was just I got done with it.
Like, well, it's a character piece. Like if you have to be completely in love with the character and want to watch him just do whatever for 90 minutes. But then, since not much happens in that film, if you're not completely on board with the character, you're going to get, like you said, like a little bored.
I'll tell you, the movie that everyone recommended to me, it is the only movie I've ever walked out of a theater before the end, was Sister Act.
You know what?
What's, who the fuck is recommending that?
Yeah, I would say
it was new in the theaters. And, oh, it's so funny. Yeah. You've got it. I'm like, all right. I was skeptical. I walk in. I'm sitting there. I'm watching it. I turn to my girlfriend at the time. I'm like, if the Pope gets up and dances, I'm out of here. That is the last of that movie I ever saw.
You know, I think
you need better friends.
Yeah, I think the problem is who you're hanging out with, really.
I've changed them since.
Good, good. Get those assholes out of there, because if they're telling you Sister Act, you need a better class of people.
Ultimately, then that's your fault.
Yeah, that was a learning experience, and I'm glad I went through it. I'm better for it.
Yeah. All right, Andy Luck. He puts hashtag tell us Thursdays and writes Star Wars, and then puts in parentheses ducks. Yeah, you got a lot of fucking nerve posting that on our Facebook page, my friend. But I'm guarantee you're one of these people who has, my guess, Andy, and email us and let us know if this is the case. You're one of the 2% of the population that's never saw it. Everyone tells you, oh my God, I can't remember. And you finally watch it as an adult and go, who gives a shit? That I actually would get. Because the reason all of us, I'm assuming, at this table loved it, we saw it as children.
Yes. Yep. Uh-huh. And we've grown up with it since.
We've grown up with it. If you were to watch that movie for the first time today, and, you know, I'm going to go to Jazzy Station and pick up some power converters, you'd be like, who gives a shit? You know what I mean?
Why are you whining?
Yeah, shut up. You know what I mean? So that I kind of get, because you're talking of decades of overhype. Mm-hmm. But you're still dumb, Andy. It's a great movie.
And also I want to mention Neil's review of What We Do in the Shadows. This is the comedic vampire movie from one of the Flight of the Conchords guys. But it's a reality show crew actually goes and interviews vampires living in a house. And Neil really liked it. I've heard great things about it. I haven't seen it yet, but you definitely want to check it out. The thing that I love about movies like this is just when you think like a genre is played out and there's nothing new you can do with it, literally vampires and reality show parodies. It's literally like those are the two things. I'm like, I'm tired of both of those things, and but they can do both in a compelling way. Mm-hmm. I'm on board. I want to see it. It's like what Chappie isn't. You know, you take
which is everything.
Yes, yeah, so you take something that's been, you know, it's familiar ground. It's been tread before, but you do it in a unique and interesting and new way.
All right. Oh, here, I got to read this one real quick in the terms of the overhyped movies. Dick Likes Poetry writes, I cannot participate in this because there are far too many haters of great films in this thread. Hashtag tell us Thursdays. Amen to you, sir. Yeah. Amen.
So we actually had a conscientious objector in that thread. That is great.
Way to stand your ground. Now, Dick, if you really want to do it, you should set yourself on fire like a Buddhist monk did. So that's all I'm saying. Go big or go home.
And get B-roll.
And get B-roll. All right, you guys.
That is the program.
That is our program. 259, put it in the books.
So, Tom, where can people find you on the internet?
All over. TomMerritt.com, 2 R's, 2 T's is my website. There's a page there where you can see all of the different shows that I do. But Mondays is Cord Killers. If you're into cord cutting, if you like movies, we talk about movies, we talk about TV shows from the perspective of watching what you want, where you want, when you want.
So it's all about like you got rid of your cable and you just on demand.
Or maybe you're thinking about getting rid of cable. Mm-hmm. It's more about like how do I take control of what I want to watch and watch.
Have you talked about the HBO app?
Yeah, that
available?
Was our big story yesterday. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
That's the domino, right?
That
there.
And Sling TV, you can cobble together a pretty good cable replacement. And the best part, this is what we love about it, is you can pick and choose. Maybe you're like, I don't care about live sports, so don't get Sling TV. Just get HBO Now, Netflix,
so that's
and Hulu.
Sling is. Sling Box is mainly for live sports, right?
Sling TV, it's not Sling Box, which is confusing. It's Sling TV, but it's got live sports and then like the home and garden food cooking set. Because some people like to have that on just in the background.
How does that work? Because I cut my cable like 5 years ago. And I loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was like, all right. But then they kept upping, those fuckbags at Time Warner kept upping my internet price to force me
into a package.
Into a package.
Right.
And then I went, I'm not getting your package.
They're basically paying you to have cable, right? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, basically because internet was just $40 a month, and then they moved to $45, and then it got up to $60, and then they're like, "But for $69, you can get a phone that you're never going to use, and a bunch of channels you're never going to watch."
Sounds great,
you know. So I just said the hell with them, and I went to Verizon to get Fios. So I was like, "All right, I'll get a little slightly higher speed." But again, that's all these channels. They gave me free HBO for a couple months, so I just DVR'd. You know, Batman
Everything.
Begins.
Yeah,
over and over,
over
again.
And over again. So I guess
I filled it up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's okay. Like I'm DVRing some shows I want to watch, but I'm like I don't fucking.
But apps and just pulling up the episodes you want is so much easier and better.
You don't have to maintain anything. You don't have to worry about a broken season pass on your DVR and stuff like that.
And then sometimes the DVRs. This happened to us last night. It stops working. Like it won't record a show.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we almost missed Walking Dead because
my power went out.
The DVR just decided I'm not going to record it tonight.
Yeah, my power went out when I was on the road, and I missed a couple episodes of Justified. Mm-hmm. So how do I do this Sling thing?
Sling TV, you go to sling.tv, I think it's sling.tv or slingtv.com, and you give them $20 a month, and then you watch it on whatever you want. You can get it on your laptop, you get it on your phone, you get it on a Roku device,
like Apple
Amazon
TV.
Fire TV.
Can
it's
I get
not
it
on Apple
PlayStation?
TV yet. It's coming to Xbox. I don't know if it's coming to PlayStation.
You know what I'm thinking? Honestly,
we could get a lot of tech questions answered right now.
No,
I think we should take advantage.
Let's say can I just pay for ESPN, like a monthly service just for ESPN, and get it on my Apple TV?
Yeah, you can pay for Sling TV, which gives you access to watch ESPN, which has an app on the Apple TV.
How do I get rid of spam?
You just can't stop using email. No one uses email anymore. Yeah. No, I actually use webmail for that. And get rid of spam. See, I have an answer.
An answer.
I know you were joking.
You
I can't
no,
stop
no,
myself.
No, I actually wanted to hear the answer.
Yeah.
How do I lose weight and feel better about myself?
You read your spam.
Helpful episodes. Yes.
All right, cool, man. So TomMerritt.com, you guys.
Yeah, TomMerritt.com. Cord Killers on Monday. Sword and Laser if you're into sci-fi and fantasy books.
Yes.
On Wednesday.
Is it just books or movies and TV too?
It's just books. We will talk about TV shows based on movies or right. I'm sorry, TV shows based on books or movies based on books.
Like Game of
but
Thrones.
It's a book club, mm-hmm. essentially. Yeah, Game of Thrones is a big one for us. And then Current Geek on Fridays for just geeky stuff.
And those are all live stream, but people can get them in archive. And
Yeah, they're all meant to be consumed as podcasts.
Great.
Outstanding.
We'd like to be on 3 out of those 5 shows.
Please do.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell you which ones.
Yeah. Just pop up.
Yeah.
The unexpected guest.
You better be ready.
Keeps things interesting. I like it.
All right, guys. Well, that's our show. I will be performing this is my doing comics on duty this weekend in Grand Forks, North Dakota at an Air Force base on the 13th of March. And on the 14th, I will be in beautiful Minot, North Dakota at another Air Force base. So there have been a couple Comedy Film Nerd fans that are serving this fine country with the Air Force. So if you are at one of those bases, I will be telling jokes with a couple other comedians, Gary Brightwell, Danny Viapondo, and I think Paul Ogata this weekend. And then, I'm going to be doing this. I just added this show, but I'll release more dates, specifics on it. But I'm going to be doing some shows in Lake Havasu in May. So check that out. And Chris, what are you doing?
I will be at Podcasts. We don't have enough time. Podcast San Diego on March 28th. I will actually be the closing keynote speaker at this event. And I will be talking about the connection between podcaster and fan. And also be showing the earbuds trailer at the conference. Now, here's the thing about the conference I want to mention to you guys, because they're allowing me to give away a couple of comps for Comedy Film Nerds fans. So email me at info@comedyfilmnerds.com. If you're a podcaster and you want to go to this conference, I have a couple of free passes available, and they're worth $100. So you definitely want to please take advantage. Email me, and I can hook up the first couple people who respond.
Right on, guys. I'll be doing some shows with Doug Benson April 19th through the 21st, San Francisco, Denver, and Eugene, Oregon. That is our show. Thank you once again. Also, PodFest, tickets are on sale and hotels are now.
In fact, people are already booking the hotels. Yep. We haven't even announced the lineup yet, but people are already booking and buying stuff.
We're working on dropping and getting some big names as we speak.
Yes, we are working on a lot of that right now.
That's September 18th through the 20th. Go to lapodfest.com.
And I've officially already asked Tom to help out with the panels.
Well, look at that. You're going to get some more weight loss tips.
Yeah.
That was the deal.
Yeah. That was the deal. Lose 12 pounds at this year's PodFest. Ask Tom Howell. All right, guys. That's our show. Thank you once again to our guest, Tom Merritt. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. As always, remember,
Han shot first. That's a Star Wars reference.
Overrated.
You asshole.